This is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Yeah, buddy, August the 19th, be with you on a Wednesday night. Welcome on into the program. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, and I'll be with you all night long as we broadcast from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. You can always catch the show, SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the Visa Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. Fun three-hour excursion lined up for you tonight on the program. We've got NFL preseason week two upon us. In about less than 24 hours, we will look at the two games on Thursday that will get us ready for a jam-packed weekend of football back in our lives. A weird trade in the NBA went down a couple hours ago. We'll dissect what it means. Big picture for one organization that might be on its final year of being relevant in the Western Conference. An injury to an AFC contender that certainly hinders what this offense can do. We have 16 newly eligible college football players. Some of them were in camps with NFL teams, but they're going to go back to college. And I'll tell you which team it impacts the most from a win total perspective later on in the show. We'll tackle NFL fewest wins. Also, comeback player of the year. Should this player even be eligible? You'll hear from Stormy Bonantoni and Jonathan Von Tobel on that scenario all later on in the show. But right now, let's get you situated where we stand with a couple of live baseball games. First of all, in Houston, 3-2 lead for the Astros over the Angels as I anticipate them putting the final touches, although, looks like a runner on first and maybe some consternation from the Houston Astros defense about a call here. I'm just locking in as we hit the air, but it's going to be a pitch. Never mind. They're going to go right back. So runner on first base for the Angels. They're plus 760. Astros minus 1120. Your in-game total currently 5.5 in the ninth. And if you think that the Angels can play to run here, you can go over 5.5 at plus 352. That is a interesting move. It just went from plus 398 down to plus 352. I wonder, with one out here in the top of the ninth, does this batter get on, or is that just because he's in a good count? It's 1-1. Hader's on to close for the Astros. Here's the thing about Josh Hader. The Astros, before he came off the IL to begin his season, they had the worst bullpen ERA in all of baseball. Since he's returned, they've been very respectable. That's been part of their resurgence, is that the bullpen's not blowing leads where the starters are competitive. But Hader right now in a little bit of trouble, I guess. 2-1 count, and there's a runner on first base representing the tying run. Oswald Peraza is the hitter currently for the Angels. Look at this next pitch, and I'll get you updated on the Dodgers and Rockies game. And that is strike two. Peraza doesn't even attempt to swing at it as Hader gets it over. At Coors Field, we're in the seventh inning. Dodgers with a lead 4-2 on the Colorado Rockies. There's one out in the seventh. Colorado's up at the plate. Keep in mind, this has been a theme here on the show as we join live in progress when the Dodgers are playing in live action. The Dodgers bullpen's been terrible lately. Edwin Diaz is on the IL. They went and looked at the MRI results. They said, sorry, doctor said my prognosis is he just stinks at pitching now. There's no injury to blame. He's just not good this season for Los Angeles. Alex Vesia on, and I believe he was in last night when we were on the air, working back-to-back nights. A guy doesn't have overwhelming stuff. Pretty good numbers, though, on the year. However, when the Dodgers bullpen is in the game and it's the seventh inning, we got a couple of innings to work with, I don't hate the idea of Colorado plus 2.5 minus 149. That's where my head's at. I won't go plus 630 on the money line. I took them last night in game around 7-1, and they ended up losing by one run. They played it a couple runs late, but it didn't matter in the end. Instead, I would go plus the run line here in game, as it looks like Houston just got the second out of the inning, but did the runner... Okay, while we were talking about the Dodgers bullpen, something happened where the Angels base runner got to second, and now a chopper to short has him going to third. Two outs, but the tying run's 90 feet away for the Angels at Minute Maid Park. 3-2 ball game. Astros are minus 1,500. You've got around 10-1 on the price on the Angels. I got to see who's up here coming up for the Angels. Because Hader, you know, a lefty, dominant stuff. I mean, he's good against everyone. And you have to remember that the Angels traded, or got rid of, I should say, two of their better bats against lefties. And Joe Adell and Jorge Soler, who historically in his career, good against lefties. Maybe not this year. He's not the same player. It's Jose Siri at the plate. Siri known more for his glove, but he has had glimpses in his career where he's been respectable offensively. On the season, he's just hitting 203 against lefties, though, and he's a right-handed bat. You don't love that in this situation. In 2024, because last year he was injured for most of the year, yeah, he had 204 against lefties. Not as great a splits as I would have anticipated from Jose Siri. He is hitting 261 on the season this year, and all he needs is just to get one to fall, and this thing could be interesting. Instead, he's going to fly out to dead center field, and that will do it. That will do it. Final score in Houston, 3-2. The Astros pick up the win over the Angels. Every time I heard Doug Kazarian updating this game, I just kept thinking about Papa Roach. Like, for some reason, Astros and Angels, Angels and Insects. There's no money. There's no possessions. Am I the only one who knows that song? It's probably my favorite Papa Roach song. It's the most underrated Papa Roach song. But either way, your final score there in Houston is 3-2. We go under the total of 8.5. Houston was only a minus $1.50 favorite, and they do get home as far as that one is concerned. Back to Coors Field, as that is now the lone night action we have. So annoying. I like sweating out live games. I like looking for live betting opportunities. And we had like one day last week where it was like 7 or 8 games in our window late. Tonight, we have one game we're waiting to play out here. It's the Dodgers and the Rockies, and they're already in the 7th inning. Vessia is in. He has achieved 2 outs. And in the betting market, it is the Dodgers minus 830, the Rockies 6-1, 8.5 the total. Again, I don't love either bullpen. That's why I'd lean over, because you are getting a discount on a total that was priced thinking about a 9-inning game, likely factoring in some of the bullpen woes for the Dodgers. This one closed at 11.5. So you are getting a discount. I would lean over here, as it looks like Mickey Moniak gets into one and it goes out to right field. You got to be kidding me. I can never get a bet in. And by the way, it's a tie ball game. It is a tie ball game at fours. Mickey Moniak with a 2-run home run. Sometimes the hard part about doing the show and setting the scene on the program is I start talking about the situations and I make the case about why I want to fade the Dodgers bullpen. And I don't have enough time, or at least the thoughtfulness, to open up my app and actually place the wager. How about Mickey Moniak? A guy I don't understand why he's still in the Rockies. I don't know why another team that needed another bat that's playoff pushing right now, I don't know why they wouldn't have traded for Mickey Moniak. I think that was his 21st of the season. That was lefty on lefty, too. Oh, man. Right now, Dodgers, minus 155 favorites, plus $1.34 with Colorado. 10.5 is the total, and now that 10.5 is juiced at minus 139. I can't touch it now. That's a 2-run difference. I can't do anything with that game currently, but I'll noodle it for a minute. The problem is, you don't want to only go plus $1.39 on the Rockies when this was a team at closing tonight. You could have gotten plus 180. It's not that much of a difference. They've tied things up. Yeah, I hate that situation. It was 6-1 literally 2 minutes ago when I pointed out what the live odds were. At this point, your only consideration is the discount on the Dodgers, because you at least believe that their bats will continuously show up. I'll tell you, at 4-4, the opportunity, if both bullpens do end up being solid the rest of the way, because we have the 8th inning, we have the 9th inning, I consider the over 10.5, because in extras, we will definitely get there. If we're playing extra baseball in Coors Field with the altitude and the way the ball jumps out of there, and again, the Dodgers bullpen being weak, also overused. That's another element at play here, is we're seeing Vessia, I believe, on back-to-back nights. That is a problem, because they're just running out of arms with the injuries. And what stinks is Sasaki was actually solid. Roky Sasaki with the start tonight, 5 innings, 7 hits, 2 earned, 6 strikeouts on 99 pitches. Brock Stewart gave him a shutout inning of relief, and then Vessia comes in and he blows the lead. Allows 2 earned on that home run to Moniak. On the other side, Freeland only went 3 2/3, left with an injury, 4 earned runs, 5 strikeouts in this contest for Freeland. And he's off the hook now, because the Rockies tied things up. And I just want to see, yesterday, how many arms did the Dodgers use in their 7-6 victory while we were on the air? Because I do remember it was a few. It was Lauer into Dreyer, Henriquez, Phillips, and Scott. Okay, you have to imagine that Scott, who threw 27 pitches and has not been good lately, he's likely not available. Evan Phillips has not been very good. I highly doubt he's available. I'm going to go over. I hate doing it after we missed out on the number we liked, but I want a little sweat here. We're going to be together for the next 2 hours and 50 minutes. I'd like to have something in the first hour of a program where we can ride together. That can't be right. Yeah, 10.5, over. I got minus 115. I don't hate that. It's minus 132 at DraftKings, so I got a better number, which means absolutely nothing if it doesn't cash, by the way. But I got the better number here in terms of the VIG. So we're going to go over 10.5. We were talking it into existence. Moniak did it and did it a little bit prematurely for us. By the way, there was a trade that went down in the NBA I want to touch on here briefly in case you missed it. This was reported a couple hours ago. The Cleveland Cavaliers have acquired Peyton Watson. The Clippers have acquired Max Strus. You figure the Denver Nuggets are the third team in the deal. They traded Watson. What are they going to get back? They got a 2031 first rounder, a 2032 second rounder, as Watson's now going to sign a four-year, $88 million deal with the Cavs. He will replace Strus. He's younger than Strus, has a bigger upside than Max Strus has as well to go into that rotation of depth that Cleveland has. And the Clippers get Max Strus, another shooter in their lineup, to add to what they're putting together. And the Nuggets, they developed a young player in Peyton Watson. They saw the fruits of his labors happen. And they have nothing to show for doing so. If you're Nikola Jokic, how do you stay with a team that's not giving you the help you need to get over the hump and win a second title? Feels like the writing's on the wall, and as far as this year's concerned, Nuggets, likely not a contender in the Western Conference. We'll hit the NFL when we return on Cashing Out, a huge injury in the AFC South that will impact that division. That's next on Cashing Out.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Cashing Out rolls on from the Circa Sportsbook. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. I'll be with you all night long on the program. We got a lot of fun stuff lined up for you tonight. We will preview the preseason games in week two. We will hit the Houston Texans, the San Francisco 49ers, and the Las Vegas Raiders with great guests who I really trust with their insight. Cole Thompson covers the Texans for Texans Wire. John Lund back in the Bay Area doing sports radio in San Francisco. And Adam Hill out here in Las Vegas on the Raiders beat. Plus, also we'll chat bottom of this hour, James Palmer, now part of the crew, NFL on Prime, Bleacher Report as well. What's he think his Denver Broncos? I don't know if it's his team, but he lives in Denver. What's he think of all the disrespect in the betting market of the Denver Broncos this year? To me, I'm not a Bo Nix guy. I'm not a Bo-liever. But the more I look at that team, it's like the blueprint is there. It's still Sean Payton. He's annoying, but he wins football games. And on paper, they got better. I know a lot of people are thinking, well, it's the Kansas City Chiefs in a bounce back spot to win that division. Absolutely. But in a one game series, right? One game matchup in the playoffs, that defense for Denver is going to show up. And people have to go to Denver to play. It always gives them an edge. And if you go back and look under Sean Payton, Drew Brees and Bo Nix aren't the same thing. They don't play the same position. But Drew Brees in year three of the Sean Payton system, that's where he reached a different echelon. Why wouldn't Bo Nix, third year back in the same system, why wouldn't he be able to take a jump where he's not learning a new playbook? This is a kid who, going back to Auburn, learning multiple playbooks, transferring to Oregon, having to learn multiple playbooks. Now in the NFL, his first year having to learn another playbook. At this point, he should be an expert in the Sean Payton system with those Davis Webb wrinkles now as the OC mixed in as well. We'll stay in the NFL. We'll hit the top stories as we do every night on the show with a thing we do called the three-point stance.
The top stories in football.
We want some more! We want some more! We want some more!
Every single day.
Ice up, son. Ice up.
This is three-point stance.
Hey, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
We'll play intramurals, brother.
And we begin in the AFC South. This was not good news when you saw it reported earlier today, because if you follow a lot of fantasy experts, Jaden Higgins was hyped up to have a monster season this year for the Houston Texans. However, reports circulating early today and confirmed, Higgins suffered a torn ACL in practice per Ian Rappaport. Higgins was about to become the team's number two wideout behind Nico Collins. Had a really solid year last year. 41 catches, 525 yards, 6 touchdowns. He stretches the field. He keeps the defenses honest, opens up the middle for guys like Nico Collins and others to work. But now he's going to be out of the mix. You have Tank Dell coming off an injury where he's not been able to stay healthy. Xavier Hutchinson as well is going to fill the void. And then Jalen Knoll, the other guy drafted at Iowa State in the same draft class last year, along with Higgins, he should be able to get more opportunities. But it just leads to more questions on a Houston Texans offense that we already don't know what we're getting out of C.J. Stroud. That is the concern here. You believe in the defense. You believe in the coaching. And I just keep wondering with C.J. Stroud, we gave so much credit to him and Bobby Slowick in year one. Then Bobby Slowick became the scapegoat in year two. Now Nick Caley is the offensive coordinator. We're going to find out. Rubber's going to meet the road. Who's actually to blame for this offense regressing? And how good does C.J. Stroud have to be for this team to win their division? Because right now, Houston favored in the AFC South, plus $1.10. Jacksonville's plus 245. Indy's plus 380. And the Titans are 8-1. I'm not really buying Indianapolis. It's not just the Daniel Jones injury. A lot of the weapons dealing with injuries right now in camp. And I don't know if that defense is going to consistently get after quarterbacks the way they need to if you're going to win this division this season. On top of that, I might be buying Jacksonville. I don't know. It just feels like a team that won 14 games couldn't be flying more under the radar than the Jags this year. The Titans will be better. I'm concerned with how trendy betting their over 6.5 win total is. I tend to shy away when it becomes too obvious with certain things like that. But you can't argue the roster's improved. The coaching has to improve because it's anyone not named Brian Callahan right now with Robert Saleh back in the fold. Houston is correctly the favorite in this division. But if C.J. Stroud is going to improve on last year, it does sting not having Jaden Higgins. And Houston also has to be kicking themselves because Keenan Allen signed with Indianapolis just the other day. That's because they're dealing with injuries to Alec Pierce and to Josh Downs. You have to wonder if Keenan Allen would have been available for another day or two if Houston could have made it work to bring in a veteran, a possession guy that can make this offense function a little bit better. When I look at the Texans' big picture, I believe in this team. I think they have the upside of representing the AFC in the Super Bowl. They have the downside of missing the playoffs, though, right on the edge there. And it all comes down to C.J. Stroud. If C.J. Stroud is just slightly below average, Houston is a team that can win the AFC. Literally, he doesn't even have to be good. If he is just slightly below average, he can absolutely take this team to the AFC title game. If he is above average, they can win a Super Bowl. The problem is his propensity to turn the ball over is such an issue. And you also, I wonder, did this injury to Jaden Higgins force D'Amico Ryans to make a change as far as the preseason's concerned? Because also reported earlier today, D'Amico Ryans changed his mind when it comes to playing time for Thursday's preseason game with the Raiders. According to multiple reports, they're going to rest their starters. They were planning to play them for some time. And I have to imagine the injury played a role here. But also, you've had joint practices with the Raiders all week. What do you need to do to play an actual game with them? We've seen the line move slightly. Raiders open minus a half point. It's up to 1.5 at most spots. I'm seeing circa, where I sit right now, only laying a point on the Raiders. I took Las Vegas at minus 120. You look at this matchup, and you're going to get a hefty dose of Mendoza because the Raiders have nothing to lose. They want to see what they have in the first overall pick. I think Cousins is going to play a little bit. The defense needs to improve for the Raiders. They struggled against the run in the first week of the preseason, but the Houston quarterback room leaves a lot to be desired after C.J. Stroud. Davis Mills, fine. He's been competitive at times, but you're going to get a lot of Graham Mertz. And Graham Mertz, no offense to him or his family, does not belong on an NFL field. That's why I'm going to take the Raiders on the road, minus $1.20 with this news. Second story up in the three-point stance, we go to New Orleans as the Saints are going to be without Alvin Kamara for a month with a sprained MCL. Now, this team added Travis Etienne in the offseason. He will work as more of a featured back, but I got to tell you, I like some of the backup pieces that they have for the Saints at the running back spot. Devin Neal out of Kansas has a little bit of speed. Audric Estime, bit of a battering ram from Notre Dame. Ty Chandler, serviceable veteran who's been around the league for a couple years. And Alvin Kamara, at this point in his career, he's not giving you as much as he used to. He's not that dual threat. In fact, he only played 13 games last year. The year prior, 15. In 2023, 13. 2024, 14. 2025, 11 games. He's been injured a lot, and he's coming off career lows in yards per carry at 3.6 and yards per reception at 5.6 for him. I think he was being filtered out of this offense to some degree, and they're just waiting out the contract. but I'm not sure this is that big of a miss. Outside of just managing Travis Etienne and the work that he has to go through, outside of that, I don't think Alvin Kamara is going to function as a major part of this offense for Kellen Moore in year two. But nonetheless, it's a body they're going to be missing, a veteran that they're not going to have in the field. And that is worth noting at this point in time. As far as New Orleans to win the NFC South, I'm not a buyer. I know a lot of people are into it. A lot of people think that this is a trendy team to look at. I will come back to the same point over and over again. Tell me who Tyler Shuck beat Paul. That's Paul Feinbaum. It's a SEC reference. It's another show. It's not on at the same time, but you get my point. I shouldn't have had to explain it, but I think there's some of you I had to do that to. Either way, Tyler Shuck didn't play anybody that mattered. I mean, he did. He played the Rams. Outside of that, he didn't play anyone who mattered. And by the way, got smoked by the Rams. If you go back and look at the starts, we're talking about Tampa Bay, losing team. Carolina barely made the playoffs. Miami fired their coach. The Jets fired their coach. Tennessee fired their coach. Atlanta fired their coach. Okay, Tyler Shuck was better than we anticipated, but how good was he really? Final story in the three-point stance. We stay in the South, where I stand by this is the pick to win the division. It's not sexy. It's not fun. It's not a juicy number, but you can get Tampa Bay at plus 170. And the juicy number is going to come in the paycheck of Vita Vea now, because the Pro Bowl defensive tackle reached an agreement on a one-year extension for $30 million, tying him to Tampa Bay two more seasons. He's also getting $6 million in new money this year, two more seasons down there for the Buccaneers. But the key to Vita Vea is that he is the anchor of a defense that is being completely underrated by everyone right now. I know Baker Mayfield has the quotes. I know Baker Mayfield has the story. And we get obsessed with quarterbacks. The story with the Buccaneers is this defense. The defense is going to be vicious. It's the best one in this division by a mile. And I don't know why it's not being discussed more. Vita Vea allows everyone around him to do their jobs. They bring in Alex Anzalone, a veteran linebacker. He's going to have a monster year because Vita Vea is going to command so much attention on the line. Josiah Trotter, second-generation NFL player, they anticipate the rookie hitting the ground running. Also, Vita Vea, the attention he gets opens things up for your defensive rookie of the year and Reuben Bain on the outside to get after quarterbacks. And that front, Vea with Kancey and A'shaun Robinson, guys, that looks like my latest family reunion at the barbecue. Everyone waiting for the chicken to come off the grill. There's some big boys right now. Tampa Bay's defense going to lead them to the NFC South at plus $1.70. Week zero college football is almost here. NFL's right behind. Now's the time to get your edge by becoming a VSiN Pro. Get our college football and NFL betting guides, plus everything we do on the website. Previews of every team in both college and the NFL start today, $9.99. Save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual sub. Sign up at VSiN.com/subscribe.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We got what we want from the live baseball game still in action. We went over 10.5. The Dodgers did not score despite Ohtani being up in the top of the ninth. We go to the bottom of the ninth. Just need the Dodgers bullpen to finish this off, send it to extras, and hopefully we go over that 10.5. Current number is 9.5. I don't hate the idea right now getting a better number as far as that is concerned. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. It's Cashing Out, VSiN, the sports betting network, and we're getting ready for NFL season. And this next guy is going to be a part of our lives very often. Every Thursday, you're going to turn on the TV. You're going to see James Palmer, as he's now part of the Amazon crew, NFL on Prime, also at Bleacher Report, doing the 89 show with Steve Smith as well, at James Palmer TV on X. Congratulations, my friend. It's going to be awesome to have you in our homes every Thursday. And just want to get your thoughts, man. This upcoming season, now part of this crew, have you circled a primetime Thursday game where you're like, all right, I'm going to be really juiced up for this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think they had the Christmas Eve game in Philly. You know, I think that's home for me, so that's big. I think I'll be there for a couple of these in person. I think Colts and Texans down there might be a really big one. You know, some ones later in the season. We'll see how everybody's playing by the time that goes around. But some of these early ones are pretty good. But to me, also the Black Friday game, just a fun one with Pittsburgh hosting Denver. Just, you know, that being the day after Thanksgiving, a really, really fun one. So, yeah, there's a lot I have circled, but I kind of like that one down in Houston And we'll see kind of what's happening in that division. Because I think some people sleep on that group, doesn't honestly. But there's three pretty good teams in that division.
Yeah, let's start there because I was just dissecting it as well. The Higgins injury to Houston, obviously something huge, difficult for an offense that struggled a lot last season. You've got Daniel Jones off the injury. And then I feel like no one is respecting the Jaguars despite winning 14 games a year ago. How do you think shake out in the South this year?
Yeah, that's why I wanted to, you know, bring that game up is I'm not one of the people that is sleeping on the Jaguars. I think we look at the way they played in the second half of the season, and they truly believe the arrival of Jacoby Myers changed their entire offense. The eyeballs he brings to the middle of the defense, they all kind of look at him. He's a professional receiver. Everybody started growing off him. You saw Parker Washington have this explosion. You saw Brian Thomas Jr. I know a lot's going on with him. You know, a lot of people are circling him going, is he going to have a bounce back after that rookie campaign? Well, there was some health issues. There was some other things going on. He spent a ton of time around the facility. He's going to play off of it. You know, Travis, I think, wants to be on that side of the ball as much as they allow him to be. I just think it's a really good offense. And Trevor and Liam Cohen, from talking to people, really seem to have something going. So I don't know why people are sleeping on a team that played so well and played so well in the second half. I think we have more questions about Indianapolis because obviously things fell apart, but they fell apart mainly because of injury. How is Daniel Jones? I think Jonathan Taylor still runs this thing. Alec Pierce's injury just continues to linger. So that gives people probably some pause heading into the year. And really what we're looking at with this division, to me, it's Houston because it's the best defense in football. And then on the other side of the ball, we've seen C.J. Stroud play great football, right? We've seen him have stretches where he's done it. And they're contemplating a contract extension even before this season starts. But he came in more lean. He's in the second year with Nick Cayley, which I think is a huge aspect when you had so much new last year. When you had Jaden Higgins as a new guy and you lose him, that's a massive blow to this offense. But there was so much new with the offensive line and everything. If you play, I almost consider them, Dustin, the reverse of the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys have an unbelievable offense, have a middle-of-the-road defense. You're in great shape. This is an unbelievable defense. If you can play good, solid offense, just even middle of the road, Houston's going to be very tough to beat.
I totally agree. I keep saying C.J. Stroud just needs to be, like, slightly below average. He doesn't even have to be good. Just yeah. And the defense will
carry
them.
No negative plays. That's what they're preaching. They're just preaching no negative plays. Don't hurt yourself. Be much tougher. That's kind of where they're kind of having this identity. David Montgomery's a big part of it. You're right. If they don't have negative aspects of their offense and the offensive line can protect and C.J. protects the football, I think you're right. I think they're fine.
James Palmer is our guest. Awesome as always. NFL Insider, NFL on Prime, Bleacher Report at James Palmer TV. You can find him over on X. Let's go to the South where Vita Vea is going to stay in Tampa Bay. That is massive. They could not have afforded to lose him. And they're the favorite to win that division as well. I know a lot of people who are talking themselves into the Falcons to win the South. I can't get there. I like Tampa Bay. Carolina won it a year ago. They're the third shot at plus 310. And then the Saints are very trendy in year two of Kellen Moore. What do you make of the NFC South?
Yeah, I think everybody during training camp that I was talking to people around the league was like, man, this Saints team is sneaky good. Like, Kellen Moore has a lot of fans around the league and other coaches. And Tyler Shough, a lot of people believe that he might be the guy. And you put Jordan Tyson and Chris Olave, who's also underrated. And you have Kamara and, you know, you have Achane back there. You have a tight end. You have everything. But, man, they're banged up coming into the year. And they're going to start slow probably because Alvin's going to miss some time and Jordan Tyson's going to miss some time. So they're going to kind of limp into the season. They're looking at maybe finding even another piece to help them out right now because of the injuries they're dealing with. I think it's Tampa Bay as well. Now, I'll say this about Vita Vea. I to my understanding, he was never going to go anywhere. And he arrived at camp in outstanding shape. He was a great teammate, great leader during this entire time. It's one of the few levers, Dustin, you can honestly pull as a player, demanding a trade. Like, you don't have a whole lot of things you can do when you want a contract to come. And his snaps have gone up each and every year over the last four seasons. And you look at this market, it explodes with Jalen Carter and company all up there making virtually double what he's making when he was at about 17, 18. Now he gets that $30 million raise. It's going to be kind of like, you know, 48 roughly over 2 years now he's going to make fully guaranteed. So he gets himself back up into the mix, and they were never going to lose him. And Baker Mayfield, I don't count him out when he's got a chip on his shoulder. He was hurt, maybe more banged up than most people understand the second half of the year, and they really like their skill group of players. And I think if you go down the list, it's kind of one of those groups that's like a basketball team. Everybody does something different in that group, and I really, really like what Tampa has the ability to do.
Chatting with James Palmer, NFL on Prime, at James Palmer TV on X. You're based in Denver, and I'm just curious, like what's the vibe with the Broncos? Because I was not a big Bo Nix guy, but I've kind of turned the corner and just believing in what this team as a group is capable of being. The win total is 9.5, and that feels disrespectful. They're 20-1 to win the Super Bowl. If Bo Nix is healthy last year and able to play in the snow against New England, they might have been playing in the Super Bowl against Seattle.
Yeah, I think they would have been if he was playing in that game, specifically with the conditions that they were in the second half and his mobility and his ability to, you know, keep his feet. He has some of the better feet in the league and his ability to run with the football. I think he actually would have gotten them to the Super Bowl if he played. If this team stays healthy, I think that's a big part of it. They've had a lot of good health luck. I mentioned that even when I mentioned Bo Nix going down to the, you know, before the AFC Championship game. But overall, offensive line, things like that, they've had some good injury luck. But I do look, you mentioned the win total. They could be better than they were a year ago and win fewer games, if that makes sense. This is the start of the season at Kansas City, Jacksonville, the Rams, at San Francisco, at the Chargers, Seattle. Like, that's a tough stretch, yeah. And you have a brand new play caller in Davis Webb, who I'm a huge fan of, but again, brand new play caller calling plays here. I think this is a really, really good team. They have a ton of confidence, but they had a very different path last year than they would have this year when you don't have Joe Burrow, you don't have Lamar Jackson, and you don't have Patrick Mahomes in the postseason. I highly doubt that's going to be the case in 2026. We'll see where they're at. I think they are a very complete football team, and they need to find a way to get more explosive, and that's why they got Jalen Waddle, and that's the difference I would see on this offense. They've really added some wrinkles when I watch practice.
James, you know, in our world, in talking season, getting ready for the regular season, we all get caught up in hyping up a team. And I can't find many people going against the Cincinnati Bengals this year. I love them. I love Burrow MVP. What do you make of Zach Taylor in a pivotal year? People believing this is the year the Bengals get back to the promised land.
Yeah, I'm kind of part of that group as well. I mean, I'm just a huge Joe Burrow fan. The way he plays the position, specifically mentally, I don't know if anybody else does it better in the league. And obviously, Ja'Marr Chase is still, you know, Steve Smith, my co-host, you mentioned the show, like sat down with Ja'Marr recently, and he's like, man, he's still growing as a receiver. He has a triple crown. He's one of the best in the game. And he's like, he's still figuring out ways to be even better as a receiver. And that's a scary thought. I just think, you know, can this defense, you know, go out there and stop some people? They played really well at times offensively. And there were times where you're going, they did what with Joe Burrow? The stats were what? And they lost the game. So let's see what they can do as a complete football team. But I do think their schedule's a little different than some of these other contenders, which I think helps them out. And I think there's a reason why a lot of people have Cincinnati circled for sure. And I think it's appropriate.
James, before I let you go here in about a minute, just give us, I'm not going to hold you to it. It's not like the locks. What's your Super Bowl matchup this year and who wins?
Man. I mean, I think everybody, and I'll just, if nothing happens catastrophically with injuries, the Rams have to be in the Super Bowl. Like, it's just, they've gotten so much better. And it was like, we've always kind of like not really paid attention to corner because we can get pressure. Oh, well, let's get two good corners. And Trent McDuffie's one of the best corners in football. And Aaron Donald, everybody is expecting him to come back. To tie him up with, you know, with Myles Garrett. So you are the first team to have the defensive player of the year and the MVP on the same team. I just think they're in a tough division for sure, but man, they certainly check a lot of boxes. And so I would say I would put LA in there. And then from the AFC, man, it is so tough. I don't think it's going to be the Patriots. I kind of don't think it's going to be the Broncos. I mean, Cincinnati's a nice pick. I do think we all slept on Baltimore last year, and I think the world of Jesse Minter. They've had some injuries as well, but I could see Baltimore, after everybody predicted him a year ago, making the run then this year.
I love that. The pressure's on for Minter and Joe Brady, first year in big spots to do something. James, looking forward to see you Thursday Night Football, NFL on Prime, at James Palmer TV. Everyone give him a follow on X. Thanks, as always, for doing this. Would love to chat throughout the season.
Yeah, appreciate it, brother.
When we return, are we experiencing the next Mark Pryor in baseball? That's next on Cashing Out.
Welcome back to Cashing Out. You're on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson coming to you from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Sirius XM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. One live game in Major League Baseball. We are on the in-game over 10.5. It is 4-4 in the 10th inning, and that is just what we needed. That is a hit by Teoscar Hernandez, but the runner holds at third. Okay, I could have used the run being scored and Teoscar to second, but first and third, nobody out for the Dodgers. Top of the 10th inning. One run from LA feels inevitable. That puts us at 9. Can we get two more between the Dodgers and the Rockies with the way, one, the Rockies bullpen just is, their identity, their core? It's unfortunate. It's not their fault. They shouldn't have to be in these positions, but they're just not that good at baseball. The other side, the Dodgers bullpen's been terrible. It's also been taxed the last few games. Who are they going to be throwing out there? If Freddie Freeman wants to hit a home run right here and put us over, I would love for that to happen. 4-4 is the score. 8 runs have been scored. We need 11. So we need 3 more runs. I'm not saying that in a way where I'm trying to like demean that you don't realize it. I'm talking the math out on the air, just so you're aware of what's happening in that moment. But first and third for Freddie Freeman, taking on Jimmy Hergert, a guy who has bounced around as a reliever in a few different spots. Most notably, the Angels and the White Sox, I want to say, are those two spots for him. Now, see, now I'm playing like my own immaculate grid. I just want to confirm that I'm right about that. I might be wrong about one of them, but not both of them. And Jimmy Hergert, out of Tampa, Florida. This is called stalling while the internet's slow. Nope, was never on the White Sox. He was on the Angels. He was on the Braves last in 2024. I don't remember that. He also was on the Rangers and the Reds. But either way, he is in right now for Colorado, and I could use a gopher ball. I'll keep you updated on what transpires in this game, as it's not been easy for the Dodgers these days. It's crazy. Y'all told me at the deadline when they acquired Skubal that this team was ruining baseball. Thus far, that hasn't been the case, and Freeman just hit one to the warning track opposite field. Runners will tag from third home from first to second. It is now a 5-4 game. God, that was close, though. He almost did what I needed him to do, taking one with those hands, just inside outing it all the way to the track in left field. Instead, 5-4 game. The scoreboard is wrong. The scoreboard says Colorado is winning 5-4. Even I'm smart enough to realize that's incorrect because the Dodgers are the team hitting 5-4. Dodgers minus 285, plus 241 with Colorado. That's the first out in the inning. Another runner on base in scoring position. Mookie Betts is up. Total of 10.5, though. Over is minus 216. Part of me wants to go under 10.5 right now at plus 162. I think I'd rather win that bet. I'll leave it alone because I'll stick by the original handicap that the Dodgers bullpen could also play a role here. But there's Mookie fouling one away. 1-1 count on him with one out. That was on a sweeper pitch. But staying in Major League Baseball, in case you guys missed it earlier today, Pittsburgh with a weird win against Detroit. But the story's Paul Skeens coming out of that. 4-3 the final score. Pittsburgh cashes minus 153. Total was 8.5. We looked at this last night. Paul Skeens' outs recorded prop was 15.5. His K prop opened 5.5. It moved to 6.5. He didn't get there with any of it. Paul Skeens, there's something wrong here, and at some point we need to acknowledge it because he failed to get through the fifth inning for the second time in his last 4 starts. 4 1/3, 3 earned, 4 walks, 5 strikeouts. Absolutely no precision. And back to the Dodger game, as Mookie Betts with a single up the middle, that plates Teoscar Hernandez, and that is run number 10, 6-4 Dodgers with the lead. Mookie's on first. We need one more to go over. Right now, it's totals 11.5. The under is minus 161. The over is plus $1.23. But Paul Skeens didn't get through the fifth inning for the second time in his last 4 starts. He was on 7 days of rest this time. Season high 4 walks for a guy who's been so efficient and economical as a pitcher. His fastest pitch was 97.9 miles per hour. And since the start of July, he's thrown 5 pitches, 98 plus miles an hour in 8 starts out of 802 pitches thrown. This was a guy a few years ago who was pumping 100, 101, hitting 102 pretty regularly in his starts. The velo is actually up today at 97.9 from 96.8 the last time around. But either way, it's way down. I don't know if it's mechanics. I don't know if it's an injury. It feels like it could be all of the above because he's not even locating his off-speed stuff. He's missing with the changeup. He's missing with the breaking balls. And that's just not who he's been for the last couple seasons. Over the last 5 starts, he's got a 6.46 ERA. He has 15 walks in 23 2/3 innings. He's allowed 17 earned runs. That is just not what we thought we were getting out of this guy. And you just have to question if this is a bigger picture thing. Is this a guy who burst on the scene and lost his stuff? I don't believe that's the case. I lean more on the side of he's a former catcher. He started at Air Force, went to LSU, pitched a ton getting ready to come to the bigs in college, then hit the ground running, was your rookie of the year. And you just wonder if it just taxed him and he needs a rest here before something catastrophic happens with his arm. But either way, Paul Skenes, if they're going to price him like the Paul Skenes of old, you almost have to take a flyer on the other side and consider a good plus price because he is not performing the same. And he was bailed out today, by the way, by Brandon Lau, who hit a walk-off home run. He leads all second basemen in home runs this year. But Brandon Lau with a walk-off homer. Flores hit a homer before that tied it. The Pittsburgh Pirates might be forcing, or Paul Skenes might be forcing himself to stay in the rotation because they're 5.5 out of the wild card. It's not crazy that they could jump Miami, that they could jump St. Louis, and maybe even jump Arizona to fight San Diego for the last spot. It's unlikely that Pittsburgh's able to do that, but it feels like Paul Skenes, if the Pirates were to ever really fall out of this, maybe 7-8 games out, maybe they consider shutting him down for the year, live to fight another day next year, because I think one thing you have to keep in mind if you're the Buccos, if Paul Skenes has a major injury that involves surgery, you're going to lose him for almost a calendar year. That's most of next year, and that's if we play baseball. But if you don't have Paul Skenes for most of next year, well, that's a cheap organization that doesn't spend money on its pitchers or its players to retain them when they become free agents. That's another year of a cheap contract that goes down the drain. Then are we talking about Pittsburgh trying to trade Paul Skenes as damaged goods at some point in the early down the road world that we're looking at here? I don't think that's that far fetched for Pittsburgh to be thinking about that, which is really, really upsetting and probably why a lot of people are calling for a salary cap in Major League Baseball. It's Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. You're locked into VSiN, the sports betting network. I want to touch on a couple of performances today that I don't really understand the pricing in the rookie of the year market, both in the National League and the American League. So first, let's go with Cleveland and Parker Messick. As the Guardians lost to San Francisco, but it wasn't Parker Messick's fault. 6 2/3, 1 earned, 10 strikeouts for the lefty. He is 9-8 on the season. He has a 2.54 ERA, 152 strikeouts in 149 innings. He's still 20-1 for rookie of the year. I don't really understand war. That's not a philosophical statement about life and our existence on the planet and violence. It's Kevin McGonigal is the favorite at minus 550. He's having a great year. I'm not taking anything away from him. This is about propping up Messick and what he's doing this year as a rookie. But Kevin McGonigal's been good, has been so good that he's laying $5 and Messick is 20-1. If McGonigal struggles down the stretch and Messick continues to pitch like this on a team trying to get in the playoffs, can he get rewarded for this? Because I think he's been sensational. And in most other years, he has a really good case for rookie of the year. Munetaka Murakami's in between them, and he missed a ton of time with an injury. His season's been amazing, and part of me thinks he deserves the award almost like an MVP because he transformed the White Sox into a team that's going to win their division, and it'd be weird if he doesn't walk away with anything for doing that. Like he's the difference maker. But I just think Parker Messick at 20-1, that number just feels too long in my opinion. And then in the National League, J.J. Weatherholt, every time I've looked up for about 2 months, has been minus 155 to win NL Rookie of the Year. And it's a lot like McGonigal. Numbers are not as good as McGonigal, in my opinion, across the board. But Weatherholt has been very good. But the war with the defense, I know that's factored in. Sal Stewart is going to have over 100 ribbies as a rookie. He's plus 185. Sal Stewart hit a homer again today. I believe it was his 28th of the season for Sal Stewart. Yeah, 27th. He had 3 ribbies. He's driven in 94 runs. He's plus 185. But Carson Bench for the Mets, their win over the Padres today, 4-2. They were plus 126 as dogs. We go under 8.5. Bench hit his 15th home run. He's 15-15. 15 homers, 15 steals. It's not out of the question he goes 20-something and 20-something. He's 9.5-1. Can he get back in this? Either way, I think Sal Stewart should be the one who's the odds-on favorite, not J.J. Weatherholt. But what do I know here? That does not track to me at all. Want to remind y'all, Football season's right around the corner, and just like the players, you need your reps before week one. The Sharps has a free weekly league that lets you practice the same football plays you already study. Props, sides, totals, and combos. Everyone starts with 10,000 chips. Build your stack, climb the leaderboard, and sharpen your reads before the season starts. Enter at jointhesharps.com or scan the QR code on the screen and use code VEASAN50 for a 50% deposit bonus up to $100. That's jointhesharps.com. Use promo code VEASAN50. Cashing out, I'm Dustin Sweetelson. We've got a lot to get to, including looking at NFL preseason week two, specifically the Texans and the Raiders. What do we expect out of Houston in this spot? That's next on Cashing Out.